to Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber producers and artists. I'm your host, Madeline Rosenberg, wishing you a happy Hanukkah. Today we're going to hear some Hanukkah tales, the first from Isaac Bashevis Singer, entitled The First Shlemiel. There are many Shlemiels in the world, but the very first one came from the village of Chelm. He had a wife, Mrs. Shlemiel, and a little child, Little Shlemiel, but he could not provide for them. His wife used to get up early in the morning to sell vegetables in the marketplace. Mr. Shlemiel stayed at home and rocked the baby to sleep. He also took care of the rooster, which lived in the room with them, feeding it corn and water. Mrs. Shlemiel knew that her husband was unhandy and lazy. He also loved to sleep and had a sweet tooth. It so happened that one night she prepared a pot full of delicious jam. The next day she was worried that while she was away at the market, her husband would eat it all up. So before she left, she said to him, "Shlemiel, I'm going to the market and I will be back in the evening. There are three things I want to tell you. Each one is very important."
"What are they?" asked Shlemiel.
"First, make sure the baby does not fall out of his cradle."
"Good, I will take care of the baby."
"Secondly, don't let the rooster get out of the house."
"Good, the rooster won't get out of the house."
"Thirdly, there is a pot full of poison on the shelf. Be careful not to eat it or you will die," said Mrs. Shlemiel, pointing to the pot of jam she had placed high up in the cupboard. She decided to fool him, because she knew that once he tasted the delicious jam, he would not stop eating until the pot was empty. It was just before Hanukkah, and she needed the jam to serve with the holiday pancakes. As soon as his wife left, Shlemiel began to rock the baby and to sing him a lullaby.
"I am a big Shlemiel. You are a little Shlemiel. When you grow up, you will be a big Shlemiel, and I will be an old Shlemiel. When you have children, you will be a Papa Shlemiel, and I will be a Grandpa Shlemiel."
The baby soon fell asleep, and Shlemiel dozed too, still rocking the cradle with his foot. Shlemiel dreamed that he had become the richest man in Chelm. He was so rich that he could eat pancakes with jam not only on Hanukkah, but every day of the year. He spent all day with the other wealthy men of Chelm playing games with a golden dreidel. Shlemiel knew a trick, and whenever it was his turn to spin the dreidel, it fell on the winning G. He grew so famous that nobles from distant countries came to him and said, "Shlemiel, we want you to be our king." Shlemiel told them he did not want to be a king. But the nobles fell on their knees before him and insisted until he had to agree. They placed a crown on his head and led him to a golden throne. Mrs. Shlemiel, now a queen, no longer needed to sell vegetables in the market. She sat next to him, and between them they shared a huge pancake spread with jam. He ate from one side and she from the other until their mouths met. As Shlemiel sat and dreamed his sweet dream, the rooster suddenly started crowing. It had a very strong voice. When it came out with a cock-a-doodle-doo, it rang like a bell. Now, when a bell rang in Chelm, it usually meant there was a fire. Shlemiel awakened from his dream and jumped up in fright, overturning the cradle. The baby fell out and hurt his head. In his confusion, Shlemiel ran to the window and opened it to see where the fire was. The moment he opened the window, the excited rooster flew out and hopped away. Shlemiel called after it,
"Rooster, you come back! If Mrs. Shlemiel finds you gone, she will rave and rant, and I will never hear the end of it."
But the rooster paid no attention to Shlemiel. It didn't even look back, and soon it had disappeared from sight. When Shlemiel realized that there was no fire, he closed the window and went back to the crying baby, who by this time had a big bump on his forehead from the fall. With great effort, Shlemiel comforted the baby, righted the cradle, and put him back into it. Again, he began to rock the cradle and sing a song.
"In my dream I was a rich Shlemiel, but awake I am a poor Shlemiel. In my dream I ate pancakes with jam, awake I chew bread and onion. In my dream I was Shlemiel the king, but awake I'm just Shlemiel."
Having finally sung the baby to sleep, Shlemiel began to worry about his troubles. He knew that when his wife returned and found the rooster gone and the baby with a bump on his head, she would be beside herself with anger. Mrs. Shlemiel had a very loud voice, and when she scolded and screamed, poor Shlemiel trembled with fear. Shlemiel could foresee that tonight, when she got home, his wife would be angrier than ever before and would berate him and call him names. Suddenly, Shlemiel said to himself,
"What is the sense of such a life? I'd rather be dead."
and he decided to end his life. But how to do it? He then remembered what his wife had told him in the morning about the pot of poison that stood on the shelf.
"That's what I will do. I will poison myself. When I'm dead, she can revile me as much as she likes. A dead Schlemiel does not hear when he is screamed at."
Schlemiel was a short man, and he could not reach the shelf. He got a stool, climbed up on it, and took down the pot and began to eat.
"Oh, the poison tastes sweet," he said to himself.
He had heard that some poisons have a bitter taste and others are sweet.
"But," he reasoned, "sweet poison is better than bitter,"
and proceeded to finish up the jam. It tasted so good he licked the pot clean. After Schlemiel had finished the pot of poison, he lay down on the bed. He was sure that the poison would soon begin to burn his insides and that he would die. But half an hour passed, and then an hour, and Schlemiel lay without a single pain in his belly.
"This poison works very slowly," Schlemiel decided.
He was thirsty and wanted a drink of water, but there was no water in the house. In Chelm, water had to be fetched from an outside well, and Schlemiel was too lazy to go and get it. Schlemiel remembered that his wife was saving a bottle of apple cider for the holidays. Apple cider was expensive, but when a man is about to die, what is the point of saving money? Schlemiel got out the bottle of cider and drank it down to the last drop. Now Schlemiel began to have an ache in his stomach, and he was sure that the poison had begun to work. Convinced that he was about to die, he said to himself,
"It's not really so bad to die. With such poison, I wouldn't mind dying every day."
And he dozed off. He dreamed again that he was a king. He wore three crowns on his head, one on top of the other. Before him stood three golden pots, one filled with pancakes, one with jam, and one with apple cider. Whenever he soiled his beard with eating, a servant wiped it for him with a napkin. Mrs. Schlemiel, the queen, sat next to him on her separate throne and said, "Of all the kings who ever ruled in Helm, you are the greatest. The whole of Helm pays homage to your wisdom. Fortunate is the queen of such a king. Happy is the prince who has you as a father." Schlemiel was awakened by the sound of the door creaking open. The room was dark and he heard his wife's screechy voice. "Schlemiel, why didn't you light the lamp?"
"It sounds like my wife, Mrs. Schlemiel," Schlemiel said to himself. "But how is it possible that I can hear her voice? I happen to be dead. Or can it be that the poison hasn't worked yet and I am still alive?"
He got up, his legs shaking, and saw his wife lighting the lamp. Suddenly she began to scream at the top of her lungs.
"Just look at the baby! He has a bump on his head, Schlemiel! Where is the rooster and who drank the apple cider? Woe is me! He drank up the cider! He lost the rooster and let the baby get a bump on his head! Schlemiel, what have you done?"
"Don't scream, dear wife. I'm about to die. You will soon be a widow."
"Die? Widow? What are you talking about? You look healthy as a horse."
"I've poisoned myself," Schlemiel replied.
"Poisoned? What do you mean?"
asked Mr. Schlemiel.
"I've eaten your pot full of poison."
And Schlemiel pointed to the empty pot of jam.
"Poison?" said Mrs. Schlemiel. "That's my pot of jam for Hanukkah."
"But you told me it was poison,"
Schlemiel insisted.
"You fool," she said. "I did that to keep you from eating it before the holiday. Now you've swallowed the whole pot full."
And Mrs. Schlemiel burst out crying. Schlemiel, too, began to cry. But not from sorrow. He wept tears of joy that he would remain alive. The wailing of the parents woke the baby, and he too began to yowl. When the neighbors heard all the crying, they came running, and soon all of Helm knew the story. The good neighbors took pity on the Schlemiels and brought them a fresh pot of jam and another bottle of apple cider. The rooster, which had gotten cold and hungry from wandering around outside, returned by itself, and the Schlemiels had a happy holiday after all. As always in Chelm, when an unusual event occurred, the elders came together to ponder over what had happened. For 7 days and 7 nights they sat wrinkling their foreheads and tugging at their beards, searching for the true meaning of the incident. At the end, the sages all came to the same conclusion. A wife who has a child in the cradle and a rooster to take care of should never lie to her husband and tell him that a pot of jam is a pot of poison, or that a pot of poison is a pot of jam, even if he is lazy, has a sweet tooth, and is a Shlemiel besides. So now, we're going to jump ship just for a minute from Isaac Bashevis Singer. And our second tale today will be Hanukkah Bear by Eric A. Kimmel. I feel a little bit like reading Rainbow, except you can't see the pictures. Old Bear awoke from his winter sleep. He poked his nose outside his den. What was that? Something to eat. Old Bear's empty stomach rumbled. He shook himself all over, then lumbered out of his den to follow the delicious smell. Bubby Branya took the last potato latke from the pan and put it in the oven with the others. Soup is healing. Soup is love. Soup is warmth this time of year. Soup contains everything a body needs. Warmth, salt, fat, vegetables, goodness. When my dog died of cancer, and you can find this whole story in another episode, I helped to heal myself by feeding soup to other people. Last week was my grandmother's yahrzeit. Bubby, for those of you who don't know, is Yiddish for grandma. So it was my Bubby's yahrzeit, and it's the first anniversary of her death. So I was thinking about that. The last conversation that I had with her was, ironically, about soup. She was lying in a hospital bed, dying of pneumonia, couldn't breathe, wasn't able to eat much, and we didn't know for sure that she was going to die, though many of us suspected it. So without broaching that subject, I asked her how her day was, and she said she'd just finished lunch. I asked her what she had, and she told me she'd had soup, and it wasn't very good. There were last conversations we could have, but it's interesting to think about the soup in which we live, our environment, our homes, our work, our friends, all of the ingredients that go into the pots of our lives. What ingredients are you using? Make sure you don't put anything rotten in your soup. All right, let's have a story about a bubby. Our next story is Hanukkah Bear by Eric A. Kimmel. Old Bear awoke from his winter sleep. He poked his nose outside his den. What was that? Something to eat. Old Bear's empty stomach rumbled. He shook himself all over, then lumbered out of his den to follow the delicious smell. Bubba Brenna took the last potato latke from the pan and put it in the oven with the others. Bubba Brenna was 97 years old and did not hear or see as well as she used to, but she still made the best potato latkes in the village. Every year at Hanukkah time, all of her friends came to her house on the edge of the forest. How they loved those latkes! Bubba Brenna always made plenty. But tonight, she made twice as many as usual. Tonight was special. Tonight, the rabbi was coming. Bubby Brenna hurried to get ready. Just then she heard a thump on the door. She opened it. Rabbi, you're here early. How nice to see you. Oof, growled Old Bear. Happy Hanukkah to you too. Please come in. Old Bear walked into the house. I'll take your coat, Rabbi. My, how thick it is. Bubba Brenna tugged at Old Bear's fur. Old Bear roared. Roar! Oh, you want to keep your coat on? Well, that's all right. It is chilly in here. Old Bear's nose twitched. Thank you, Rabbi. How kind of you to say that. The latkes will taste even better than they smell. Old Bear followed his nose to the oven. Rabbi, I'm surprised at you. You know we don't eat until we light the menorah. That's all right. I know you were teasing. I'll light the candles. Will you say the blessings? Bubba Brenna struck a match and lit the shamus candle. Then she lit the one for the first night. Old Bear muttered and growled.
Who has kept us alive, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this season. Oh, Rabbi, you say the blessings so beautifully.
Bubba Brina sat down at the table. Old Bear sat beside her.
Let's play dreidel. We'll use these nuts.
Old Bear cracked one with his teeth.
Rabbi, you won't have any nuts for the game if you eat them.
Growled Old Bear.
Don't worry. I have plenty of nuts if you need more.
Bubba Brina spun the dreidel. It stopped on the letter Gimel.
I win!
Bubba Brina swept the nuts into her apron. Old Bear roared.
Don't be angry, Rabbi. It's only a game.
She tossed him a nut. Old Bear begged for more.
No, Rabbi, no more nuts. It's time for dinner.
Bubba Brina opened the oven door and took out a platter piled high with steaming potato latkes. Old Bear sniffed the latkes as she set them on the table.
Do you prefer sour cream or jam?
Bubba Brina asked. Old Bear growled.
Jam, I thought so.
Bubba Brina smeared 5 big latkes with jam and stacked them on Old Bear's plate. Old Bear gobbled them down. Bubba Brina laughed.
You should use a fork. You have jam all over your beard.
She wet a towel and wiped Old Bear's face.
I must tell you, Rabbi, you eat like a bear. I'm hungry like a bear, so I eat like one. I can see that,
Bubby Brina said. Old Bear ate and ate until the latkes were gone. He felt drowsy. His head flopped on Bubba Brina's lap.
Rabbi, you sleepy? Who wouldn't be sleepy after such a meal? All the latkes are gone. It's time to go home. But before you leave, I have a Hanukkah present for you.
Bubba Brina took a red scarf from her knitting basket. She wrapped it around Old Bear's neck.
I made it myself.
Old Bear licked Bubba Brina's face. Bubba Brina blushed.
Oh, Rabbi, at my age!
Old Bear shuffled to the door. He growled as he walked off into the night.
Good night to you too, Rabbi. Happy Hanukkah!
Bubba Brina was washing dishes when she heard another knock.
I wonder who that is.
Shalom, Bubba Brina!
All her friends stood at the door wishing her a happy Hanukkah.
Shalom, everybody!
Bubba Brina said.
How nice to see you. I'm sorry I don't have any more latkes. The rabbi came by, he ate them all.
Bubba Brina, don't you recognize me?
It was the rabbi.
The rabbi couldn't have eaten your latkes, everyone said. He's been with us in the synagogue.
Bubba Brina rubbed her forehead.
Something strange is happening. Rabbi, I think there is an imposter going around. He looks like you. He talks like you. He even has your beard.
Just then the children cried,
Look at the floor! Bear tracks! A bear? And I thought it was the rabbi.
Bubby Brina had to sit down. Soon she began to giggle.
That was a very clever bear. Or a very foolish Bubba Brina. Ah, well, let the bear have a happy Hanukkah. I had a happy Hanukkah, too, and so will you, dear friends. Bring some potatoes from the cellar. Fetch my grater and bowl. Everybody has to help. You too, Rabbi. If we all work together, soon we'll have latkes for everyone.
Deep in the forest, Old Bear slumbered in his den. His stomach was full of potato latkes. The warm woolen scarf was wrapped snugly around his neck. Pleasant dreams, Old Bear, and happy Hanukkah. Just a quick scotch of an update on the Duluth Trading Company situation. As far as I know, they still haven't responded. There's more. This from Lady Sheepshearer on Instagram. Here we go again, this time with @LuckyBrand. Y'all give me a headache. Now, it's not just implicitly singing the praises of oil, plastic, and microfiber pollution, but animal abuse as well. Let me qualify that statement. We humans bred shedding out of sheep over the course of 10,000 plus years so we could get warm clothes more easily, no hunting, sheep in the yard outside. Wool, with lanolin in it, is heavy. Depending on sheep body size, a fleece can weigh from 4 to 6 pounds on a small sheep to 15 to 20 pounds on a large one with dense wool every year. Add up the weight a sheep is walking around with on a 120-pound frame every single year. Exactly. No wonder they hop away when I'm done shearing. I'd do that too if I lost 15 pounds in 5 minutes. Without shearing, sheep can overheat and die. They are more susceptible to fly strike, in which flies lay eggs in dark skin folds and cuts, and maggots eat the sheep alive from the inside out. Come see, smell, and help me deal with that at Lucky Brand. The sheep also get skin problems, and lambs accidentally nurse on manure-laden wool, which should have been removed. Then the lambs die. Such are the wonders of animal neglect. If I knew this company kept sheep, I'd call animal control, but this tag shows the chasm between some parts of the textile industry and where our fibers really come from. This is truly a big reason I wrote a book about it. I welcome the opportunity to shed light on the true origins of wool, sheep health, and humane animal care. You can also see this post on Experience Wool on Instagram. You'll see the same thing. I'm referring, of course, to the picture of a tag of an authentic Lucky Brand Softest Yarns Shearless Fleece Sweater. It's polyester. They have a merino on the tag and an X over a pair of scissors. The world needs more fat sheep. It has nothing to do with being fat. The other side of the tag says, not a single sheep was sheared in the making of this garment. And this is supposed to make us want to buy it. Many of us, of course, are speaking out. This is just one more incident, and I'm sure there's plenty out there that you could find. Keep posting them, keep cross-posting them, keep commenting. Continue to call and make your voice and the truth heard. And don't support these companies with your dollars. That's the way that we change things. I'm happy that so many of you are commenting and that we've begun this conversation. Keep it coming. That said, I wish we were talking about something happier. I know people love to be angry, but remember that you can comment on this episode as well, or others in the show notes, which you can find at ballyhoofiberemporium.com/podcast. For our third and final tale of Hanukkah week, we return to Isaac Bashevis Singer with Zlata the Goat. At Hanukkah time, the road from the village to the town is usually covered with snow, but this year the winter had been a mild one. Hanukkah had almost come, yet little snow had fallen. The sun shone most of the time. The peasants complained that because of the dry weather there would be a poor harvest of winter grain. New grass sprouted, and the peasants sent their cattle out to pasture. For Reuven the Furrier, it was a bad year, and after long hesitation, he decided to sell Zlata the Goat. She was old and gave little milk. Fivel, the town butcher, had offered 8 gulden for her. Such a sum would buy Hanukkah candles, potatoes, and oil for pancakes, gifts for the children, and other holiday necessaries for the house. Reuven told his oldest boy, Aaron, to take the goat to town. Aaron understood what taking the goat to Fivel meant, but he had to obey his father. Leah, his mother, wiped the tears from her eyes when she heard the news. Aaron's younger sisters, Anna and Miriam, cried loudly. Aaron put on his quilted jacket and a cap with earmuffs, bound a rope around Zlata's neck, and took along 2 slices of bread with cheese to eat on the road. Aaron was supposed to deliver the goat by evening, spend the next night at the butcher's, and return the next day with the money. While the family said goodbye to the goat, and Aaron placed the rope around her neck, Zlata stood as patiently and good-naturedly as ever. She licked Reuven's hand. She shook her small white beard. Zlata trusted human beings. She knew that they always fed her and never did her any harm. When Aaron brought her out on the road to town, she seemed somewhat astonished. She'd never been led in that direction before. She looked back at him questioningly, as if to say, "Where are you taking me?" But after a while, she seemed to come to the conclusion that a goat shouldn't ask questions. Still, the road was different. They passed new fields, pastures, and huts with thatched roofs. Here and there a dog barked and came running after them, but Aaron chased it away with his stick. The sun was shining when Aaron left the village. Suddenly, the weather changed. A large black cloud with a bluish center appeared in the east and spread itself rapidly over the sky. A cold wind blew in with it. The crows flew low, croaking. At first it looked as if it would rain, but instead it began to hail as in summer. It was early in the day, but it became dark as dusk. After a while, the hail turned to snow. In his 12 years, Aaron had seen all kinds of weather, but he had never experienced a snow like this one. It was so dense it shut out the light of day. In a short time, their path was completely covered. The wind became as cold as ice. The road to town was narrow and winding. Aaron no longer knew where he was. He could not see through the snow. The cold soon penetrated his quilted jacket. At first, Zlata didn't seem to mind the change in weather. She too was 12 years old and knew what winter meant. But when her legs sank deeper and deeper into the snow, she began to turn her head and look at Aaron in wonderment. Her mild eyes seemed to ask, "Why are we out in such a storm?" Aaron hoped that a peasant would come along with his cart, but no one passed by. The snow grew thicker, falling to the ground in large whirling flakes. Beneath it, Aaron's boots touched the softness of a plowed field. He realized that he was no longer on the road. He had gone astray. He could no longer figure out which was east or west. Which way was the village, the town? The wind whistled, howled, whirled the snow about in eddies. It looked as if white imps were playing tag on the fields. A white dust rose above the ground. Zlata stopped. She could walk no longer. Stubbornly, she anchored her cleft hooves in the earth and bleated as if pleading to be taken home. Icicles hung from her white beard, and her horns were glazed with frost. Aaron did not want to admit the danger, but he knew just the same that if they did not find shelter, they would freeze to death. This was no ordinary storm. It was a mighty blizzard. The snowfall had reached his knees. His hands were numb, and he could no longer feel his toes. He choked when he breathed. His nose felt like wood, and he rubbed it with snow. Zlata's bleating began to sound like crying. Those humans, in whom she had so much confidence, had dragged her into a trap. Aaron began to pray to God for himself and for the innocent animal. Suddenly, he made out the shape of a hill. He wondered what it could be. Who had piled snow into such a huge heap? He moved toward it, dragging Zlata after him. When he came near it, he realized that it was a large haystack which the snow had blanketed. Aaron realized immediately that they were saved. With great effort, he dug his way through the snow. He was a village boy and knew what to do. When he reached the hay, he hollowed out a nest for himself and the goat. No matter how cold it may be outside, in the hay it is always warm, and hay was food for Zlata. The moment she smelled it, she became contented and began to eat. Outside, the snow continued to fall. It quickly covered the passageway Aaron had dug. But a boy and an animal need to breathe, and there was hardly any air in their hideout. Aaron bored a kind of a window through the hay and snow and carefully kept the passage clear. Zlata, having eaten her fill, sat down on her hind legs and seemed to have regained her confidence in man. Aaron ate his 2 slices of bread and cheese, but after the difficult journey, he was still hungry. He looked at Zlata and noticed her udders were full. He lay down next to her, placing himself so that when he milked her, he could squirt the milk into his mouth. It was rich and sweet. Zlata was not accustomed to being milked that way, but she did not resist. On the contrary, she seemed eager to reward Aaron for bringing her to a shelter whose very walls, floor, and ceiling were made of food. Through the window, Aaron could catch a glimpse of the chaos outside. The wind carried before it whole drifts of snow. It was completely dark, and he did not know whether night had already come or whether it was the darkness of the storm. Thank God that in the hay it was not cold. The dried hay, grass, and field flowers exuded the warmth of the summer sun. Zlata ate frequently. She nibbled from above, below, from the left and the right. Her body gave forth an animal warmth, and Aaron cuddled up to her. He had always loved Zlata, but now she was like a sister. He was alone, cut off from his family, and wanted to talk. He began to talk to Zlata. "Zlata, what do you think about what has happened to us?" he asked. "Zlata answered. If we hadn't found this stack of hay, we would both be frozen stiff by now, Aaron said. Was the goat's reply. If the snow keeps on falling like this, we may have to stay here for days, Aaron explained. Zalada bleated. What does ma mean? Aaron asked. You'd better speak up clearly. Zalada tried. Well, let it be ma then, Aaron said patiently. You can't speak, but I know you understand. I need you and you need me. Isn't that right? Aaron became sleepy. He made a pillow out of some hay, leaned his head on it, and dozed off. Zalada fell asleep too. When Aaron opened his eyes, he didn't know whether it was morning or night. The snow had blocked up his window. He tried to clear it, but when he had bored through to the length of his arm, he still hadn't reached the outside. Luckily, he had his stick with him and was able to break through to the open air. It was still dark outside. The snow continued to fall, and the wind wailed, first with one voice and then with many. Sometimes it had the sound of devilish laughter. Zalada, too, awoke. And when Aaron greeted her, she answered, Yes, Zlata's language consisted of only one word, but it meant many things. Now she was saying, we must accept all that God gives us. Heat, cold, hunger, satisfaction, light, and darkness. Aaron had awakened hungry. He had eaten up his food, but Zalada had plenty of milk. For 3 days, Aaron and Zalada stayed in the haystack. Aaron had always loved Zalada. But in these 3 days, he loved her more and more. She fed him with her milk and helped him keep warm. She comforted him with her patience. He told her many stories, and she always cocked her ears and listened. When he patted her, she licked his hand and his face. Then she said, and he knew it meant, I love you too. The snow fell for 3 days, though after the first day it was not as thick and the wind quieted down. Sometimes Aaron felt that there could have never been a summer, that the snow had always fallen ever since he could remember. He, Aaron, never had a father or mother or sisters. He was a snow child, born of the snow, and so was Lada. It was so quiet in the hay that his ears rang in the stillness. Aaron and Zlada slept all night and a good part of the day. As for Aaron's dreams, they were all about warm weather. He dreamed of green fields, trees covered with blossoms, clear brooks and singing birds. By the third night, the snow had stopped, but Aaron did not dare to find his way home in the darkness. The sky became clear and the moon shone, casting silvery nets on the snow. Aaron dug his way out and looked at the world. It was all white, quiet, dreaming dreams of heavenly splendor. The stars were large and close. The moon swam in the sky as in a sea. On the morning of the fourth day, Aaron heard the ringing of sleigh bells. The haystack was not far from the road. The peasant who drove the sleigh pointed out the way to him, not to the town and Fievel the butcher, but home to the village. Aaron had decided in the haystack that he would never part with Zalada. Aaron's family and their neighbors had searched for the boy and the goat, but had found no trace of them during the storm. They feared they were lost. Aaron's mother and sisters cried for him. His father remained silent and gloomy. Suddenly, one of the neighbors came running to their house with the news that Aaron and Zalada were coming up the road. There was great joy in the family. Aaron told them how he had found the stack of hay, and how Zalada had fed him with her milk. Aaron's sisters kissed and hugged Zalada and gave her a special treat of chopped carrots and potato peels, which Zalada gobbled up hungrily. Nobody ever again thought of selling Zalada, and now that the cold weather had finally set in, the villagers needed the services of Reuven the Furrier once more. When Hanukkah came, Aaron's mother was able to fry pancakes every evening, and Zalada got her portion too. Even though Zalada had her own pen, she often came to the kitchen, knocking on the door with her horns to indicate that she was ready to visit, and she was always admitted. In the evening, Aaron, Miriam, and Anna played dreidel. Zalada sat near the stove watching the children in the flickering of the Hanukkah candles. Once in a while, Aaron would ask her, Zalada, do you remember the 3 days we spent together? And Zalada would scratch her neck with a horn, shake her white bearded head, and come out with a single sound which expressed all her thoughts and all her love. We're having a winter much like that in Zalada the Goat. So far, little snowfall. Thank God. We did have snow flurries all day today, and we've had several days with a little snow, but nothing that sticks. And I'm happy to keep it that way. Our goats are gaining mass. The girls are definitely pregnant. Probably March kids. So that's something to look forward to. And speaking of goats and milk, we made mac and cheese for dinner tonight, and I had to get milk out of the freezer at the last minute to put in. Ironically, now that we produce our own milk, I don't find that we use that much of it. At least out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. And so when I need it, I suddenly find myself having to defrost it in warm water to get the half cup or so that I need. But I'm grateful to have it. Grateful for the goaties. Grateful for all of you listeners. And if you are a fan of the Ballyhoo Goats, you're getting the audio here on the podcast, but if you are a Patreon subscriber at any level, you will have access to a video. And I had already made this Lot of the Goat video this week. I apologize to all my Ballyhooligans. I'd made the video, and when I went to post it, the audio hadn't come through. So I have to go reshoot it in the freezing cold because I love you all that much. So you'll get the same story, but with audio and the Ballyhoo Goats. And as we go forward through the month of December, we'll have more stories with more animals around the farm. So if you want to be privy to those videos, make sure that you go to patreon.com/ballyhoofiberemporium and subscribe at any level. Again, you will get those videos. I hope that all of you are staying warm with your knitting, crocheting, weaving, what have you, and experiencing the delight of light, be it electric, candle, fire, or otherwise. Have a great week. Have a happy Hanukkah. And remember, spin everywhere.